from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, the federal food stamp program, known as SNAP, supports 1 in 7 Americans at a cost of around $80 billion a year. With almost 70% of adult Americans overweight, some nutrition advocates want to prohibit SNAP recipients from using food stamps to purchase junk food, such as soda and chips. Opponents say that such restrictions would unfairly target the poor and limit their food options. And we'll discuss the issue. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 70% of adult Americans and 1 in 3 children in the United States are overweight. And many see the consumption of junk food as a major contributor to the nation's obesity epidemic. A congressional divide exists over whether or not to cut funds for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, widely known as SNAP, and a controversy has emerged over nutrition standards. Should food stamp users, 1 of 7 Americans, be blocked from buying junk food? Food stamp expenditures are 4 times what they were in 2001, now having reached $78 billion, and Republicans have passed legislation that would cut $39 billion of that figure over 10 years, which Democrats are trying to make certain in negotiations over the Farm Bill does not succeed. In this opening Forum Hour, we take up the debate over food stamps and nutrition, and joining us from Washington, D.C. is Carolyn Lockhead, who is Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle. Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Michelle Simon, who's here with us in studio, public health lawyer, president of Eat Drink Politics, a consulting firm focused on food policy and industry tactics. And she's the author of Appetite for Profit, How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back. Welcome, Michelle Simon.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And also glad to have Jessica Bartholow, who is a legislative advocate for the Western Center on Law and Poverty, which addresses poverty through legislative, budgetary, and administrative advocacy. Welcome, Jessica Bartholow.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you all aboard here. Carolyn Lockhead, let me begin with you, and let's just see if you can take us through all of this divisiveness, nothing unusual in that, but over the Farm Bill, partisan politics again being held up in Congress, and how did nutrition standards get into this whole debate?
Well, actually, neither party really wants to address the issue. There's one lone bill out there by a Republican, Ted Rowe of Tennessee, who would set nutrition standards in the program, but he said that's just sort of a something to throw out there for debate. He doesn't intend to pursue it. The thing is that the Republicans are under pressure, heavy lobbying pressure from the food industry that does not want to impose nutrition standards and food stamps, and Democrats, closely allied with anti-hunger groups, also oppose any sort of limits on the program.
So we're at essentially a standoff here again. Is that what it amounts to, especially over all these subsidies, too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Farm Bill is in danger of not getting passed this year, given the fight over food stamps. But it's a fight over money, not nutrition.
Well, and how does the fight for money break down, I mean, in terms of each of the parties, as you see it?
Well, Republicans want to slash the program, and they say it's turned into a major welfare program, it's helping able-bodied adults, and they pick on this surfer dude down in Southern California, sort of the modern sort of poster child of abuse of the program. But neither side, I mean, is willing to look at what the food stamp program is buying and its link with a major public health crisis in this country of obesity-related diseases that are concentrated pretty remarkably among poor and minorities.
Well, it gets down to some extent to, I mean, is SNAP a welfare program or it has nutrition? The N is for nutrition, right?
It is, but that's an odd thing. The food stamp program, unlike the National School Lunch Program, the WIC program, and other food programs, does not have nutrition standards. You can pretty much buy what you want, except for a few things like, you know, pet food, shampoo, restaurant food, that heated food in supermarkets and that kind of thing.
The WIC program, we should say, is a program, nutrition program for women, infants, and children. And we're also talking about nutrition vis-a-vis lunches in schools. But food stamps seem to fall into an entirely different category, don't they?
They do, and they are probably the nation's premier anti-poverty program next to the Earned Income Tax Credit program. It's a very big automatic aid program for the poor, especially during a recession. A lot of people depend on it.
So what we're talking about, again, is lobbying interests that are keeping the Congress from perhaps taking up obesity and public health costs?
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of frittering around the edges with it. The Heritage Foundation made a list of demands for, on Republicans in the Farm Bill, and one of them was addressing the junk food issue, and that's the one thing that Republicans didn't put in their Farm Bill.
Michelle Simon, a lot of this is the junk food lobby and also the big box retailers, isn't it?
Yes. Well, what I did with the report that I put out last year is really try to reframe this issue to look at who the moneyed interests are that benefit the most from this multi-billion dollar program reaching $80 billion a year. And it is really the junk food lobby, the big box retailers, and the third party in all this is the banks, because they administer the EBT cards that people use to purchase with what they actually use to purchase the food products in the stores. So, you know, I think it's no surprise that even though it's true Congress is gunning for cuts, and that's a big problem, we certainly don't want to see that happen. You know, I think behind the scenes, the likes of Walmart are saying, well, listen, don't cut this program too much because that's going to cut into our pockets.
It's also hard to access this data. I know there was a Yale study that came out that said recipients of food stamps spend about $2.1 billion a year just on sugar sweetened beverages. But getting the data, especially from the grocery stores and the supermarkets and the big box stores, very difficult.
Right. We have a huge lack of transparency problem here in that we really don't even know how that N in SNAP, which stands for nutrition, is doing, because the government, first of all, doesn't bother to collect data on exactly what types of products are purchased with our taxpayer dollars. And secondly, to the extent that they do have data related to, for example, where folks are shopping at Walmart versus smaller stores versus farmers markets, that data, they say, is not, they don't want to release to the public. So there have been fights over just getting that basic data out, and yet we still don't really know how to evaluate the effectiveness of this program.
And Carolyn mentioned that anti-poverty groups, anti-hunger groups, actually, are in opposition to having nutrition standards set up for food stamps. You see some dots connecting here to the kind of money they're getting from Walmart and other organizations?
Well, there is an unfortunate appearance, at least, of conflict of interest. When you have big food companies like PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, big box retailers like Walmart, giving money to many of these national anti-hunger groups that are also opposed to improving the food stamp programs by putting some nutrition standards on it. So, you know, look, you have certainly legitimate concerns about engaging this type of policy, but you have to ask the question, when Walmart is both lobbying against improving the program and giving money to the groups who are on their side, it certainly doesn't look good.
Although, Carolyn Lockett, I know Mary Nessel, who's I suppose you could describe her as a food activist, has said that changing nutrition standards will justify budget cuts.
Say that again?
Mary Nessel said that changing nutrition standards would justify even more budget cuts.
Well, that's an interesting argument. Michelle has argued, I think, pretty persuasively that if you reform the program so that people don't see people buying potato chips and soda at the counter, at the checkout counter, that would actually increase support for the program.
Let me go to Jessica Bartholow, who, again, is a legislative advocate for the Western Center on Law and Poverty. And Jessica, I mean, what's the concern about having these nutrition standards for food stamps where your group is concerned?
Well, look, the guests here on our show today have said that the nutrition, the information about how SNAP supports nutrition and healthy eating among low-income Americans is not available. And that's just not true. The most important nutrition benefit of the SNAP program is preventing hunger. The program, which received bipartisan support up until this year, this very with this Congress, was created specifically to reduce hunger among low-income families. And it does that. It does that very well. Does it tell people what to eat? No. In fact, what it does is it allows low-income Americans to purchase their food in a grocery store like everybody else and to make the decisions that they believe are the right ones for their families, like everybody else. Anybody who has worked to increase nutrition among low-income families knows that one of the most exciting things that families can do for their own family and to support their own nutritional eating is to make those decisions themselves. It doesn't make sense to take a program that's working to reduce hunger. It is the most successful anti-hunger and anti-poverty program we have in the country right now, and to change it. Simply because somebody's looked in their neighbor's shopping cart and doesn't agree with what they're purchasing.
So you're saying it would, in effect, split people who are impoverished who need this SNAP help from the rest of the population and say to them maybe that they have a stigma or something along those lines?
Yeah, this is exactly how anti-poverty programs have been divided and conquered throughout the history of this century. Somebody finds a story about how the program's being misused, and they beat away at it until finally the good guys cave, they cut the program. But guess what? Just like we did with public benefits in the Clinton administration, we cut those benefits significantly, welfare to low-income families with children, and the talking points still remain. Even though that program is substantially less assistance and leaves families in dire situations, the talking points of abuse and neglect and misuse still remain. This is not a program that is failing. It's a program that's thriving and that's working to prevent hunger, and that should be the core of the program. What we do know is that the one way we could help improve the likelihood that families could access nutritious foods is by increasing the benefit level. This program took an $11 billion cut for the first time in its history on November 1st, and those families are less able to purchase healthy food because of it. Now we're looking at an additional $40 billion of cuts in the Farm Bill. It's abhorrent that this is the conversation that we're having at a time with unprecedented levels of poverty and inequality. We ought to be talking about how to increase the benefit level.
Well, there's also a lot of talk about just increasing the incentives to buy more nutritious food with food stamps or having disincentives to buy junk food. But there's also California food policy advocates. George LeClaire, I think, was the head of the study that said that there's a growing evidence of low-income people using food stamps to buy healthier food.
That's right.
So you have to mix that into it. But what about the fact that back in June there were 18 mayors, I guess, who signed a pledge essentially saying that there should be restricted food stamp use for the purchase of sugary drinks? I know that this, you mentioned the history of this. This argument goes all the way back to 1964 when they were debating if soda should be under food stamps. But, you know, you've got 18 mayors who say there should be taxes on sugary beverages.
You know, I did see that letter. I was disappointed to see it. I know other mayors, Mayor Kevin Johnson and city council members in L.A. and in Oakland are very concerned about the cuts and are coming out, asking us questions about the cuts and what it would mean for their cities and their economies, right? Let's not forget that the program not only helps low-income people afford food when their wages and other income are not suffice, but it also helps the economy. It creates jobs in the local grocery economy and the food economy in our Central Valley. And so these mayors and city councils are absolutely right to be concerned about what's happening in D.C., and most of them are concerned about the cuts.
Well, let me go back to Carolyn Lockhead, because, Carolyn, I think maybe avoiding this argument, Congress also is avoiding what may be a rather formidable difficulty of defining just what junk food is. And that process itself, as was pointed out a number of years ago by Food Nutrition Service, which actually operates the food stamp program for the Department of Agriculture, that would be a costly and impractical kind of job to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was interesting. Under the Bush administration, they put out a pretty lengthy report arguing strenuously that this is just a logistical nightmare and they can't possibly do it. That remains to be seen. I did run across a few studies that attempted to weigh the nutritional value of foods. Some argue that it would be difficult, but one easy target would be sugar-sweetened beverages, and there's probably no nutrition argument that can be made in their favor as opposed to regular water. I think what gets overlooked or is pertinent to this debate is that it's in tandem with a serious public health problem with obesity that's costing also a lot of money. So you've got these two giant federal programs, food stamps and Medicaid, and they seem to be working at cross purposes.
And let's talk more with Michelle Simon just about how the corporate sector and corporate subsidy figures into this. I mean, your report talked a great deal about SNAP as a corporate subsidy.
Sure. Well, I think it's also important to just take a step back and look at the history of the program. You mentioned 1964, but actually even earlier than that, when the program was first conceived, it was meant to really help farmers with excess crops. In other words, where they had grown too much tomatoes or cucumbers that week, that was the fresh food, the real food that was made available on the food stamp program. And then in 1964, when we formalized the program, we did have this debate in Congress about removing soft drinks, or not allowing soft drinks at that time. And Senator Paul Douglas made an impassioned plea for it, saying that these products were certainly not nutritious. And here we are 50 years later having the same discussion. And now, of course, we have an even worse food environment that people live in. And so we have to really be thinking about this taxpayer program as a corporate subsidy. So there's been lots of talk over the last few years about the role of corporate subsidies in the form of corn and soy, all of the inputs, right, for sugary soda, for junk food, that we're concerned is fueling this obesity, but also diabetes. I really prefer to talk about the health impacts of poor diet rather than weight per se. But the point is, people are suffering from eating all the wrong kinds of foods, and that is in part because of our agricultural policies that are subsidizing the wrong inputs. Heavy meat and dairy, heavy corn, soy, all those types of commodities that go to the junk food diet that Americans are mostly living on. And by the way, that's true whether, you're an American who happens to be on SNAP or not. We just know Americans in general are not eating right. So back to the subsidy problem. So if we know that we are having the wrong agricultural policies, promoting the wrong inputs to this unhealthy diet, then we have to be asking the question, well, what are we doing with this large taxpayer program subsidizing the likes of Coke, Pepsi, Kraft, Mars, Inc., the junk food candy companies, soda companies? We're subsidizing the very diet that we know is not good for you, both with the agricultural inputs and with this taxpayer program for how people are choosing to eat.
And Jessica Bartholow, you would concede here that we do have a public health crisis, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely, especially among low-income Americans. But I would say that the biggest public health crisis that we have in America is not that people are buying a soda here and there with their SNAP benefits. It's that we have dire situations of poverty. Poverty is the most significant public health crisis in our country right now. Inequality is very significantly impacting the health of low-income Americans. That's what we ought to be fighting together on. That's what we ought to be working together on. That's what the Farm Bill ought to be addressing. And all the time we spend talking about whether or not a low-income person can, like other Americans, make the food choices that they're making in an environment, Ms. Simon's right, that doesn't promote or support or encourage healthy eating. In fact, it makes it harder, the food system that we have right now. But the time that we spend, the energy we spend debating whether or not low-income families will have the same food environment that other families have is time wasted, and time that really would be better spent if is spent talking about poverty and inequality and how we build ladders into the middle class. One thing I want to say also about this talking point, you hear it a lot on this conversation about the food stamp benefits subsidizing corporations. This, to me, is very disrespectful and very indicative of the kind of politicking on the plates of poor people that's happening in Washington, D.C. The food stamp program doesn't subsidize corporations. It subsidizes the food budget of poor Americans, many of whom are working, many of whom are disabled or elderly and have no other way to prevent hunger except for this program. The food stamp program empowers them to make their own choices. By saying that the food stamp program, or the SNAP program now that we call it, subsidizes corporations, you've just leapfrogged over the most important recipients and beneficiaries of the program and completely disregarded their choice and their existence in, and participation in the program and the choices they make. It's very typical of the debates we're having about SNAP.
Let me ask Michelle Simon to respond to that.
Sure.
Michelle.
I completely agree that the problem in this country is poverty. I mean, there we are in 100% agreement, and I think that Walmart should stop lobbying to maintain the status quo in food stamps and start paying its workers a living wage so that Walmart workers aren't ironically so dependent on food stamps and then turning around and spending their food stamps at Walmart. So there's no question that we need to address poverty in all kinds of other ways. As far as my leapfrogging over, you know, the participants by talking about SNAP as a corporate subsidy, I would say by only talking about SNAP as a way to, you know, help people not be hungry, we're ignoring the fact that the biggest lobbyists for the status quo are Coke, Pepsi, Walmart, Mars Inc., et cetera. And there is this disconnect between having this program called a nutrition program. And while it may be true that it's keeping some Americans from being hungry in the, I would say, kind of old school definition of that term. So, you know, when we first started talking about nutrition programs, all we really cared about was people not being hungry. But I would say that nutrition from a public health standpoint is now even just as important, certainly, and that nutrition should really be thought about in a broader way. And by the way, people are probably still hungry because they're not getting the nutrition that they need. And hunger is more than just, you know, not feeling hunger pangs, but has to do with actually getting good nutrition. And so I think we have to look at all of these issues together.
Do you look at or consider the argument that this is that nutrition standards and regulations move us more toward paternalism and nanny state, those kinds of things?
Well, you know, I think what's interesting to me is why we separate out the SNAP program from these other important food assistance programs is, you know, and you mentioned WIC, the National School Lunch Program. So, you know, we don't seem to think
Well, children are involved in those, though.
Okay, but you know what? Both women are adults, first of all, women's infants and children. It's what women can purchase, yes, for their children, but they're
eating
that
school
food
lunch
too.
Program mainly, yeah.
Okay, and let's talk about who's on SNAP. Half of all SNAP participants are children. So, you know, why is it that we care more about the children who are being served from a nutrition standpoint through the school meal program than half of our participants who are children on the SNAP program?
I think that's an important question. And could I get you to respond, Jessica Bartholomew, before we go to a break here?
Absolutely. The answer is simple. It's because in SNAP, the benefits are not given to children. They're given to their parents. Their parents who we should be trusting to make decisions about what food is appropriate for the household and when. When we give money to schools to make decisions for children, that's an institution. And we should absolutely be setting the highest standards for how institutions make decisions about how to feed other people's children. But when we're giving the benefit to an adult in the household, a parent, a caregiver, a grandparent that's taking care of a child, it's part of how we make decisions and sit down as a family together and have a meal. It's a very cultural decisions, personal decisions, and rely on people's responsibility to make the right decisions. If we don't think they're making the right decisions, then there are other ways to impact those policies. And one other thing I would say about the difference, the distinction between hunger and good nutrition that Ms. Simon mentioned, the research shows that even one incidence of hunger, of going without food for a child, can impact the lifelong of their health. You can't disregard the import of the experience of hunger, not just for their physical health, but also their mental health. Going hungry, especially in a country where there's so much wealth and so much that people have around you, can be isolating, humiliating. It's embarrassing. I can speak from personal experience.
All right, let me jump in here because we're coming up on a break, and I want to afford the opportunity for listeners to join this conversation. Our toll-free number is available. Please feel free to join us, 866-733-6786. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the federal food stamp program known as SNAP, supports 1 in 7 Americans at a cost of around $80 billion a year, with almost 70% of adult Americans overweight. A number of nutrition advocates want to prohibit SNAP recipients from using food stamps to purchase junk food, such as soda and chips and Opponents say that such restrictions would unfairly target the poor and limit their food options. We've gone into the debate here this hour with Carolyn Lockhead, Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle, Michelle Simon, public health lawyer, president of Eat Drink Politics, and Jessica Bartholow, who's a legislative advocate with Western Center on Law and Poverty. And certainly would like to hear from you, and you are welcome to join this conversation. You can do that by calling us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting any questions or comments you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to go to calls and emails here in just a moment, but Michelle Simon, lay out for us a little bit what can be done about, well, enhancing the nutrition of those who are using the SNAP program.
Sure. Well, you know, there's a very basic public health concept, which is that if you shift the environment that people live in, then they will automatically gravitate towards healthier options, right? So right now we have a situation where most people have access, unfortunately, only to unhealthy food. But we know that if we, for example, require an improvement in what is offered through the food stamp program, retailers will have a market incentive to provide healthier options. How do we know that? Because that's exactly what happens with improvements to the WIC program, which we've been mentioning. So when WIC retailers were told, you have to have some fresh produce, some whole grains, et cetera, they, guess what, were incentivized to provide those healthier options, and then the program shifted. So I think, and many others have looked at that and said, well, why couldn't that same concept apply to a much bigger program? Yes, more complex. But in other words, we have a tremendous opportunity with this, again, almost $80 billion a year program to say, how can we shift our food system, which is, most people would agree, extremely broken from a number of standpoints. How can we use this as an opportunity to provide a healthier food environment so that these people who are most in need, not just of food, but of healthy food, can access it?
I wouldn't imagine you'd disagree with that, Jessica Bartholow, would you?
Well, you know, I would say that it's seeing, you know, failing to see the forest through the trees. Really, the best way to help people who are on food stamps now eat healthier is to get them off food stamps. That also, by the way, reduces the cost of food stamps. And how do we do that? We make sure that their incomes are suffice to pay for food without the benefit itself. You know, if we could get corporations and businesses to be paying a living wage, if living wage and minimum wage supporting jobs or bills and legislation and policies, either at the local, federal, or state level that we can get passed, the less people are going to need the food stamp program, and the more they're going to be able to be out of poverty in a place where they're living in stable environments and can more readily afford healthy food.
But in the meantime, Carolyn Lockhead, Congress is just avoiding this issue altogether, not wishing to step into it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they'll be lucky if they get a farm bill passed. But I think in the broader debate, I think both sides are coming to realize that we do have a public health crisis on our hands, and that the whole food, the notion around the farm bill itself, is shifting from just talk about calories to actual healthy nutrition. And we've seen that. It's been a continuum with the WIC program and then the school lunch program. First Lady Michelle Obama really led the charge on changing nutrition standards in school lunches, and early evidence shows it's having a good effect. There's pushback against that. There's a bill now proposed from North Dakota to get rid of the nutrition standards in the school lunch program, which I don't think is going to happen, but you can see the pushback.
Let me bring our callers into this. Our first caller joins us from, I think, what often is called the breadbasket state, Nebraska. Stu, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I would have to say both of your experts have nailed it. You know, the incentivizing to get the garbage junk food off the shelf is one component of it, because it does force people to say that option is not available to me anymore. Even if I'm not educated to make a better and more nutritious choice for me and my children, this is what is now offered, because the supermarket just won't let it ring up as an EBT transaction. Your other expert also nailed it in saying that this income disparity is really what it is. And my wife and I were both in school, full-time class load. She was in a master's program. I was in a physics program. And I was working 30 to 40 hours every week and making $10 an hour, not minimum wage. And it was still difficult with our two children to make ends meet. I mean, anybody who knows how expensive formula is, you know, this is, so the idea that this program was there to help us, I was very wary of taking the card with me to the supermarket. And finally, my wife said, you've got to stop spending our money on this. That's what this program is for. It's so that we can get by right now, support our children, and pay in later. And now we both have our big boy and big girl jobs, and we are paying in, and that system was in place to help us. And we would absolutely not have made it through school and have our lives on track now if it weren't for just SNAP and WIC.
All right, Stu, I thank you for the call. And there's a strong endorsement from someone out in the middle of America. Let me get another local caller on here. Diego joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. I just like to mention that in this discussion, something I'm not hearing is food. They're called food deserts. You know, a lot of places, like the caller just said, where, you know, he could go to a grocery store and buy whatever he wanted, whether it be carrots or Cheetos. But in places like Oakland, West Oakland and East Oakland, there's these huge expanses of areas where you can't go to a grocery store. So the only issue, the only choices that these kids have and families have are to go to the smaller little stores. So I think when you take away the choices, you know, like, one of the people you have on there said, you know, the whole purpose of this program is to, you know, end hunger. So I think before we kind of go delve into this, you know, taking care of the choices, I think we have to improve access.
Well, I thank you for that. And Michelle, Simon, that pretty much dovetails with what you were saying. You change the food environment, and that means in many cases making good food more accessible in certain neighborhoods particularly.
Absolutely. And there's no question that this is a much broader challenge that many people are trying to address, and we need to address, you know, way beyond just the food assistance program. In other words, people having access, true access to healthy food and having that be affordable and widely available, not just to privileged few. But again, I think, you know, it's a false framing to say, well, we'll be limiting choices in an environment that, you know, where people don't have access. Again, I think what we're talking about is trying to, I mean, right now, a small fraction of the money on food stamps is being spent at a farmer's market, despite efforts to try and increase that, because most people, again, only have access to those corner stores, or actually it's more the big box retailers where people are spending most of the food stamps. The point is we can shift that by looking at how to shift our policies and encouraging retailers to provide healthier foods, and that's what has been shown on other programs like WIC.
Well, Jessica Bartholow, in the SNAP program, as I understand it, there is you can't use food stamps to buy alcohol. You can't use them to buy tobacco, household supplies, pet food, hot meals, in fact. Why limit it to those things? Why not expand that?
Well, there actually was a proposal in the House of Representatives during the Farm Bill debate to expand SNAP benefits to other household necessities like diapers or toilet paper, things that people need and can't afford. We're finding a lot of families don't have access to these very basic necessities of life. It was rejected, of course, but it's right. The food stamp program, the SNAP program, does not support the purchase of non-food items. The way that the program distinguishes about what's allowed and what's not is what the FDA determines is an edible item. And those are the same rules across the United States of America and for the entire program as they should be. I just want to say that
of course, you have these infamous things like pizza being declared a vegetable. And
that's right. And I don't understand. I do not understand these proposals in other states that some are making to end the healthy food guidelines for the child nutrition programs. They don't make any sense to me. Again, these are programs for children purchased by institutions. It makes sense that those would be required to be healthy decisions. I want to shout out just to Stu and Diego for calling in and talking about the real life experiences of people living in very poor communities or who are like Stu. They need the program to bridge a gap of instability in their lives, and then they're going to get on. And Stu, you know, he benefited from an EBT, from a SNAP program, a food benefit program that allowed him to shop like his neighbors. like everybody else in his community. They didn't call him out, didn't put a scarlet letter on his back when he went in and had to be treated differently at the cash register. And that cannot be overlooked as a key feature of the program. Congratulations to you, Stu, and your family.
And here's another caller who is a food stamp recipient. Mike, good morning. You're on.
Hi. I want to disagree with Jessica there on her utter refusal to have nutritional standards. And I am a recipient, and I have a six-year-old daughter, and we are dependent on getting past an employment lull and with food stamps. But we are very conscientious eaters, and we take our food stamps to the farmer's market here in Vallejo, and they double their value. They give you double these chips to use at the farmer's market for the value of the food stamps. So I think that should be supported. Local farmers should be supported. And reducing your global footprint by eating locally as opposed to these big box stores that import processed foods from China and everywhere else. So I think she's been attacking her colleagues there and her utter refusal to face the fact that these health care problems are epidemic and that these food stamps do affect children and their nutrition. And this worry that people on food stamps are should be allowed to make whatever choices they want also ignores the addictive nature of these sodas and sweet foods and the fact that people are hooked on them, and that addiction shouldn't be subsidized by the taxpayers.
And you say what, Jessica Bartholow?
Well, first of all, Mike, thanks for sharing your story. And it's not easy to come out and talk about being on food stamps, especially in this climate. I appreciate it. And you're doing the right thing for you and your daughter. The program that Mike talked about, the Farmers Market Bonus Buck Incentive Program, is absolutely a model program. It's how we should be incentivizing healthy food purchase for low-income SNAP recipients. It helps encourage and fund, support the people to shop at local farmers markets. It's a great program. I'm glad you're using it. And I would say that this is one of the things that should have been considered in the House Farm Bill. We should be investing in that program. We should be requiring every state in the nation to support the use of EBT at farmers markets, at their local farmers markets. And we also lost the opportunity to do that. Why? Because in D.C., the climate is to beat up on low-income families, to wage a war on the poor, and attack programs that they serve. And to have this conversation outside of acknowledging that is the debate, I think it could be very damaging to the program. And that's why I have the position that I do.
Well, let me thank Mike for his call and go to a caller joining us from West Virginia. Kelly, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm kind of sympathizing or relating some with what Jessica is saying. I'm involved with a program called Blessings in a Backpack. It's a national nonprofit organization that packs backpacks for children on the free or reduced lunch program so they can have food on the weekends. And as a mother myself, I often struggle with the types of food we put in these backpacks only because they're non-perishable goods. There has to be foods that the children can prepare themselves, and we have such a limited budget to feed as many kids as possible. So, yes, there's macaroni and cheese, and there's ravioli, and there's things that, you wish you could fill it full of full produce. But I think what I'm getting from listening to everybody talk is, why are we even attacking any of these programs? Why are we not focusing our energy on the bottom line of why isn't it as cost-effective to purchase produce? Why in our country is it so much cheaper to buy these processed foods and hand them out as opposed to any of the other debates surrounding it? I agree. I think the hunger is the bottom line, and fixing hunger has to be the first step. And then from there, let's go on and make it more nutritious if possible.
And food costs do play into this, Michelle Simon.
Of course. And again, poverty is a problem that we need to fix, and we need to make healthier foods more affordable, and we need to be asking the question, where should our government tax dollars have the most use? And, we're not talking about telling people how to eat and this idea that, that people on SNAP should be able to shop like everyone else. Let's remember that the S in SNAP stands for supplemental. So this program was never meant to be the entire food budget for a family. And unfortunately, it has replaced in in our broader policy agenda a lot of the basic welfare benefits that people used to get. And this is, you know, a much bigger problem, that we do beat up on poor people, that poor people don't have enough money to even put food on their tables for their families. And yet that should be these issues aren't mutually exclusive, right? I mean, I think we should be looking at that also in the context of how people are able to make healthier food choices and how we're really shaping this program.
Well, and then it also, since poverty has played into this discussion in a central way, Carolyn Lockhead, I mean, really, how much is Congress looking at poverty, if at all?
This is the virtue of food stamps, is that it rises automatically as people need it, and that's a good thing. I think there's a sort of an urban myth floating around in this debate that we've almost touched on, but not quite, and that is that junk food is cheaper than real food. And I ran across a really interesting column, Mark Spitman, the New York Times chef slash food columnist, wrote, who sort of took an experiment on what he could buy, what money could buy. And actually, junk food is more expensive, that you can, if you purchase the right things, beans, pastas, canned vegetables, frozen vegetables, they all work. So it's not necessarily a fact that junk food is cheaper.
Let me read some emails and tweets here, a lot coming in. Tara writes, I manage a government-funded food program for seniors, so it's not just children, and I have to follow very strict nutrition guidelines. I agree with Michelle that the SNAP program is subsidizing junk food companies, and people need nutrition and not just calories. James tweets, regulating nutrition choices directly leads to poor outcomes. School lunches are a great example of how wrong this goes. And a group titled End Hunger Connecticut tweets, why not ban sugary drinks, etc., from federally funded military meals and members of Congress's snack machines? Why ban them only from SNAP? Comments on the web. Phil says, here's what I think would be a great idea. If we're able to send somebody a bank statement every month letting them know what they spend their money on, why can't we send somebody a food statement? Anybody on food stamps should receive a statement illustrating everything they spend their money on and its nutritional value. It would help people make an educated decision by showing them what they're currently purchasing, and maybe even the statement includes some of the nutritional value of the food. More tweets. Daniel says, feeding the hungry and empowering with choice is great. However, that argument alone ignores the elephant in the room, obesity. And Rachel writes, should the focus of SNAP be preventing hunger or providing nutrition? Malnourishment takes more than one form. Another listener puts on our website, prediction, Big Food will blow through so much money to squash this idea, it will make the GMO labeling fight look like chump change. The challenge is beyond enabling mere access to healthy food, a.k.a. whole unprocessed ingredients. It involves empowering people to be able to actually procure it, prepare it, and help their families learn to actually enjoy it and choose it over the chemically addictive stuff that they've eaten for so long. I'll read a few more emails here. Scott writes, I believe for a long time that the SNAP program should restrict the foods that it pays for. After further consideration, I realize but not everyone has access to stores that sell high-nutrition food, so what do we do for people who can't reach a big grocery retailer? I think listeners are raising some very important and central questions here. Another listener, Annette, writes, please consider that the cost of apple juice, grape juice, cranberry juice, orange juice is usually $3 to $3.50, while soda, diet or otherwise, is 89 cents to $1.19 for a liter bottle. Don't you think soda is purchased first and foremost because it helps to fit within the modest food stamp SNAP food relief budget? And let me go to more of your calls. Go to Matthew next. Matthew, join us.
Hi. It's been a great program, but I haven't heard much talk about any data, and I think that the discussion of incentives is really important, but we haven't heard any research that's shown which incentives work and which incentives don't work. And I think without some hard data, we're really just spinning our wheels here. And thanks again, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Well, thank you for the call. Jessica Bartholow, data other than poverty data?
Again, amazing listeners to KQED Forum. Great comments. What information is out there? The USDA just finished up with the state of Massachusetts a study to find out whether or not healthy food incentives can help improve the overall diet of households that rely on SNAP to prevent hunger. And we're really anxiously here in California looking for the outcome of that report, and it should come out soon. And the other thing I wanted to throw in there, just based on the comments, was that we can't forget, this kind of broader elephant in the room, that low-income people have less choices in general. overall. They live in communities that are dangerous to walk in, where there's less options for transportation. They have fewer options for safe housing, places to cook. They're not able to safely garden usually in the communities where they live. They lack jobs where that afford them a living wage. Many of them will have to work one or two jobs. Several are disabled. These are folks in general who lack options. That's why they are low income. That's why they're relying on SNAP. And to further, you know, to talk about how to improve their diet by further restricting their choices is the wrong approach. Remember that obesity is not just a result of what you eat, but it's about the life you live. Stress can contribute greatly to obesity. So can lack of rest and sleep contribute to obesity. Missing meals can contribute to obesity. These are all things we haven't talked about.
Well, can I get Michelle Simon on here in terms of data, though, before we move on? Michelle? Yeah.
So there has been a lot of very innovative programs in the popping up in the last few years. One was mentioned that the USDA took under in Massachusetts. California, New York, Michigan, these are all states that have experimented with these incentive programs, in other words, to give people, perhaps double their money at farmers markets and so forth. Unfortunately, we really do not have any research yet, and we've been waiting for this USDA research for many years now, to show whether those are effective programs. And I'm certainly in favor of the idea, anything to get people to shop more at the farmers market or to spend more money on fresh produce, I'm all for. However, again, that should not be a distraction from this very real problem, ongoing problem, where people are spending money on all the wrong kinds of food. So I want to, have that be part of the conversation, but not the exclusion.
Well, but it's also unlikely, I'd say, Carolyn Lockhead, that Congress is going to fund this research as needed as it might be.
Well, actually, there's quite a bit of interest in that. And there's groups like Wholesome Wave, Roots of Change, that there is some money in the Farm Bill to expand those programs. And I think that's the one area that everybody agrees on. And there's also, I think, a point to be made on the addictive nature of these junk foods. The science is showing that that is the case, and I think that's a pretty big black mark against them, that these foods are actually dangerous for you.
Here's a caller from Iowa. Mia, join us. You're on the air on Forum. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you so much. Wonderful program. Two quick questions. My first question is, what are the incentives for people to stop using food stamps? My second question is, could you please provide a statement that I could say to someone who uses their food stamp EBT card in the checkout line and then uses cash to purchase alcohol or cigarettes or something like that, or something I could say to that individual at that point? Because that's very frustrating to me to see that happen.
What would you like to say to them?
I would like to ask them if they understand where their money comes from and ask them why they think it's okay to receive benefits for food, but then it's okay to use cash. If someone needs food, absolutely. But if you have cash, you use your cash for food.
Michelle, this is kind of your territory.
Well, I don't like getting into this kind of, judging of people and the purchasing that they make. I mean, but I will say that this type of attitude goes to the fact that we have this program that people are upset about. So, for example, there was a Republican state senator in Florida who had the same experience of seeing someone buying, quote unquote, the wrong food in the checkout line and got upset and so went back to work and decided to propose a bill to not allow food stamps to be used for junk food. And so my point is that we have an environment where, yes, unfortunately, there is this hating going on, this judging going on that I think is completely wrong, but I think we need to address. And one way to address that is to look to how to improve this program to insulate it from this type of, really negative and misguided type of judging. And the ways to do that is more transparency, allowing states to experiment with how to improve the program so that we can defend this program in a way that it should be defended.
And something to add, Jessica Bartholow?
I would say the best way to get out of this very negative national conversation about what's wrong with poor people and why it is they can't make the right decisions is to have a real, honest conversation about poverty and inequality being at record rates and what we're doing as a nation to prevent it, because right now there is no plan to end these record numbers of poverty, inequality, and hunger. And I think these kinds of solutions that are being proposed by Ms. Simon and others really get us away from that conversation.
Now, let me read a few more emails here. This is a young woman named Alicia who says, I work at Starbucks within a Safeway. Because things like Frappuccinos are considered cold food within the store, I have to serve these drinks with less nutritional values than a rock, and people are allowed to use EBT. Certain families come in every day using this taxpayers program to buy the whole family Fraps. Another listener, Regina, writes, it's high time that people poor and rich be accountable for their health. It's not up to the government. If people are overweight, their health insurance should be more expensive. If they take street drugs, they should be required to go to rehab in order to even get government help. And another listener, Beth, writes on our website, rather than denounce restricting buying junk food with SNAP, how about the opponents work harder to get access to healthy food to all those on SNAP? It seems so uncaring and inhumane to me that anyone would not want to do everything possible to help the most vulnerable among us avoid unhealthy choices. And James writes, is there any evidence that restricting SNAP to healthier foods would help eliminate food deserts, example, by increasing demand for healthier foods in areas where by increasing demand for healthier foods in areas where demand is currently low? And that these same questions keep cropping up and keep emerging. Carolyn Lockhead, maybe before we conclude here, you can give us a sense of what's ahead for this farm bill, if anything.
Well, if I knew, if anybody knew, they're all still negotiating. It's just a massive showdown between Senate Democrats who want to preserve spending in the program and House Republicans who are dead set on taking a big whack at the SNAP program.
And you still feel that regardless of what occurs or doesn't occur, there's just going to be an utter avoidance of talking about this subject?
Yes, but I mean, this is entering the conversation because we do have a public health crisis on our hands, and there are compelling stories showing up. One from the Washington Post down in Texas about what a very, very impoverished family was eating on food stamps.
Well, thank you, Carolyn Lockhead. Always good to have you here with us, Washington correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle. We also want to thank Michelle Simon, public health lawyer and president of Eat Drink Politics, a consulting firm focused on food policy and industry tactics, and the author of Appetite for Profit, How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back. Jessica Bartholow, also with us this hour, legislative advocate for Western Center on Law and Poverty, which is an organization that addresses poverty through legislative, budgetary, and administrative advocacy. And thank you, our listeners. You can continue this conversation on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and click on this segment. Another hour up ahead with Amy Tan, famed novelist, who will be joining us in studio. Thank you for being with us this hour and for all of us at KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.